is an interview with Nadine Yoneko Dozono. And the interviewer is Clark Hansen for the Oregon Historical Society. The date is 1/23/98. And this is tape 2, side 1. We were talking in the last tape about your parents coming from Japan and the trip that they had coming over here and whatnot. When did they, what religion did they grow up with? And when did they convert to Christianity?
They did not ever convert.
They never converted?
No, no.
Uh-huh. So, when you were growing up, then did they practice Buddhism?
Well, Buddhism is something that you don't practice. You go to Buddhism funerals or ceremonies, but even now, I don't think that in the Buddhist churches there is not what you would call a service like they have in the Christians, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a matter of being born into Buddhism. Mm-hmm. But my father was a very devout Nichiren, and that's also Buddhism, but that's another sect. And
what is the Nichiren sect characterized by?
It's just another sect in the Buddhism. Mm-hmm. Is just like the Methodists and the Baptists and the different denominations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have a Nichiren church here in Portland that he was very much involved in.
Hmm. So then at what point did you become a Christian?
When I was growing up in Northwest Portland, there was a very dear lifelong friend named Jewel Tozier. And she came from an old pioneer family here in Oregon. And when she was going to University of Oregon, she would teach these children who played in the North Park box. Mm-hmm. And she took a great liking to my sister, Masako, and me. And although I was only 3 or 4, I remember that my sisters and I would go there, and she would teach us. Well, she didn't teach me. I was always just playing around, but she would teach them basket weaving or different kind of gymnastics. And at that time, the North Park blocks had a lot of apparatus. Mm-hmm. And swings and different things. And so she would be there every summer as part of her job. Mm-hmm. And I remember back in 1928 when the great earthquake in Tokyo occurred. Mm-hmm. My sister and I were the ones who were taken to the First Methodist Church downtown. It's changed. The church has changed from downtown over to Jefferson, but the old Methodist.
Right.
And I remember that my sister and I went up in front of the pulpit, and we received the donations from the church, and I remember that very well. Hmm. And so we were going to Sunday school there. So that would be when I was like
12?
I say 1928, and I was born 1915.
Must be about 12, when you were about 12?
If that was 1928 and I was born in 1915, I would be 8. 1928?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. You're right.
13.
Right.
I see. Uh-huh. Well, then in terms of your parents, though, did they have any Buddhist traditions or practices or anything that they did at the home, anything that was Buddhist oriented at home?
Not really, but my father always used to say that you were born and you're an American, and so you have a right to choose your own religion. Mm-hmm. And so he never dissented about the fact that my sister and I went to church there.
Ah, uh-huh.
And so I have a Bible that was given to me around that time, and we went to church there. And we lived over here on the east side, and we would save our pennies, walk down to the Methodist church that's crossing the Burnside Bridge and going over there to save our 5 cents streetcar.
Ah.
And then we would go to church, and then we'd go to a friend's house for a Japanese man who had a hotel in Japantown. And then we would go see a movie for 5 cents and then walk back. A streetcar, I think, at that time was 5 cents.
But you would have to walk back afterwards?
Oh, yes. We didn't have to, but we did to save our money.
Ah, yeah. I see. And
so since then, even before then, we were taken to church by Miss Tozier. For all of our lives, we always called her Miss Tozier.
Hmm. Do you know how she spelled her last name?
T-O-Z-I-E-R.
So then going back to your parents, then how would you describe their philosophy of life from what you knew, their view of life? How would you describe that?
Both of my parents are very giving people, and they always shared with people who are less fortunate than they were, and this is going further on into my life, but when I was 4 years old from Japantown, we were one of the first to move into an American neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that was a very sad time of our history because we were known as Japs. And we had one neighbor on facing the house at the right side called the Davies, and Gwen and I are still friends. She lives in the Dells, but we are still old friends. And on the other side, there were the Millers, and they're very cruel to us. Mm. But my parents, being in the position where he helped so many people, especially the farmers, they had a Saturday market down on Yamhill Street at that time, where the stalls were out on the streets. And the vegetables and the fruit that they couldn't sell, they would bring us crates of different things. And my parents always shared with all the people. And gradually they got to know us for what we were, and not that we were, you know, the snide-eyed Japs that they had. And you can understand that they probably had their prejudice because they had never seen a Japanese person before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's another interesting part of my life that,
yes,
I would like to tell you later.
What do you feel that your parents imparted to you in terms of the way you are today?
Well, I think that as I said, that they've always shared whatever they had. And even if we were poor people, we never thought of ourselves as being poor because everybody else in the neighborhood was poor.
Right.
But my parents are very giving people, mm-hmm, and we were always taught to share. And that's something that I've always felt that I should do in my whole life. That's my philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were they involved in any activities or associations after they came over here?
Probably they were very much involved in the Okayama Prefecture Club. But my father never believed in politics, and so when they had Japanese, it's now called the Japanese Ancestral Society, but he never believed in getting involved with politics.
So was he not then a member of the Japanese Ancestral Society?
I don't think so. And the reason why I think about that is because they had a Japanese float at that time, and the people, especially the people, Japanese people downtown, wanted their daughters to be princesses or the queen of the float, and it was all through voting through the association. But my parents would never allow any of us to even think of being involved in that. And so that was a sore spot because some of my friends were, you know, being involved, and they're anxious about being the princess and that sort of thing. But plus the fact that we had moved out of the Japantown too, and we were living over on the east side.
So why was your father adverse to involvement in politics? Why did he not want to be involved in politics?
Well, he never did talk about it, but after I hear the history of Japantown and that sort of thing, unbeknownst to me, and probably to my sister, that there was a time in Japantown where they had killings and they had gangs, like the so-called mafia, and he wanted us to move out of that area and not get involved, and so I think that's probably one of the reasons why he had us move out.
But he didn't want to be involved in any kind of political activity?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But even at that time, he was sort of a, I don't know if you call it the broker, but he was a person that used to work out in the hop fields in Salem, Albany, and Independence, and he used to hire these Japanese people and the Filipinos to work out in the hop fields.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was always in that sort of a position where he was sort of hitting other groups of people. And I think that probably could have been one of the reasons why he didn't want to get into politics.
Mm. So when he came over here, I think you had said earlier that he probably worked on the railroads.
Railroad.
And then after that, you said that he had set up a mercantile company in Hood River?
In Hood River.
Now, what was that? What was that like? Did he tell you anything about that?
Well, I think in Dina's book, it tells about the fact that in Hood River, there were Japanese, and they had this store where they there were farmers and fruit workers in Hood River, so he and his brother went there and opened up the store where you can get Japanese goods and Japanese canned goods and mm-hmm. shirts or towels or whatever, you know, the people needed.
And this would have been during what period of time, would you say?
That was before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I read in some place that it was probably in like 1905. I mentioned to you that there is an article written by one of the prominent Japanese families there, by the Yasui family,
mm-hmm.
and they took over my parents' store. And I found that recently after I came back. But in this article that's in the Oregon Historical Society, they do mention about the Neguma brothers having the store and later taken over by the Yasui family. But there's an interesting article in there that said that they ran the mercantile shop, which later became also a brothel.
Presumably after your father left.
I don't know. And so I have talked to Dr. Homer Yasui, who is one of the brothers, one of the sons. And so I laughed and I said, Homer, I just wonder if that was before after my parents had that. And he laughed and he says, I have no idea. But it is in the Oregon Historical Society, one of the books.
I'll check that out. So did his brother come over here before or after?
After.
After. Mm-hmm. And did he have anybody else from his family over here?
No.
That was it.
No.
And
I must tell you, though, that his brother was very my father was short and stocky, and my uncle was tall and very handsome, but he was considered a ne'er-do-well. Mm-hmm. I remember that my parents always had to help him and his family.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did his family stay in the Hood River area?
No.
They came
back here to Portland.
Came back here. Now, what drew them back to Portland after having been outside of Portland?
Probably because of my father.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What about your father? Why did he come back to Portland?
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But I do know that my father had a hotel that he ran for many years.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of the hotel?
The only hotel that I remember was I remember that I was told that I was born in that vicinity where the Killam stationery store, I think it's still there, but around Benson Hotel on the north side, there used to be, I don't know if it's there or not, Oak Hotel. My father ran that.
Oak Hotel.
Oak Hotel. And that was a time when we moved from Oak Hotel to Northeast.
I see.
We moved into this two-story house that's across the street from the France Bakery now.
Yes.
It's industrial now, but...
And so was that on... Did you say that was on Davis or...
That was Everett.
On Everett.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Do you remember the address?
Oh, dear. No, I used to remember the address, and it's part of France parking lot now.
Oh. And why there? What was the reason for moving there?
See, there are parts of my father's life that I don't know, but at one time, too, he was running a small restaurant, and he and Mr. Franz, the owner of Franz Bakery, were great friends. And it could be that the house was empty there, and Mr. Franz could have influenced my father to move there. Mm-hmm. But as you also know, that at that time, the Japanese were not allowed to own houses.
Now, was that always the case up until then?
Until probably around 1952, I think, when the Japanese were finally allowed to become citizens.
Mm-hmm. So. None of the Japanese could own houses. But what about businesses? Could they own the property?
I think they were all leased.
And did people talk about that much? Did people feel like they were being discriminated against and that they couldn't own property?
Well, these are the things that I've learned in later years that I do know that Mr. Franz, being German, and my father being Japanese, and both being immigrants, were friends. And I do know that the story goes that Mr. Franz encouraged my father to buy a land over here in the Lads Addition.
Yes.
But my father couldn't own it. And so it was a pity because if my father was able to buy land, he probably would have been richer than he ever was. And my sister, the second sister, was the one, when we moved from Everett to Davis, my father finally bought the house, but it was in my sister's name.
Now, when did you move to Davis then?
Probably in the 1920s.
And was that very close to the home that you'd lived in before in
It was
Everett?
just 2 blocks away,
So
Davis and Everett.
why was the move? Why did you make the move? Was it a bigger house?
It was a bigger house, a nicer house.
So the first house that you lived at in Everett, how would you describe what it looked like?
It was a tall, to me it looked like a castle, you know, it was tall and with a big slanted roof, and we walked into we walked into the house, and it was a narrow hallway, but there was a door that came into the parlor, and that was very cold, but it was very austere, just for company. And then through the hallway we went into what I guess you would call the family room, because Papa always had a big wood stove in there. And that's where we all congregated. And I remember my father had a big desk over on the one side, and there was a big pot belly stove. And when we moved there, I remember that it was all gas lit. Do you remember?
Yes.
Have you ever seen gas?
Oh yes.
With a little white. It was a little white cone like this, and there was like a chandelier, and there were several. And my father was very clever, so he took all that out and put electricity in.
Huh.
At that time, I'm sure that there was not a restriction where people had to come in to inspect it to see if it was fireproof or whatever.
Right.
And then from this big family room, we walked into a kitchen, and there was a... We faced this sink, and then on this other side there was a big oven and a big wood stove, and then we had this huge round oak table that my sister has now with the lion
claw feet.
Right. And then from the side of the kitchen on the left side there was a porch where my mother used to put all of her vegetables and things. And then from the porch, the toilet was separate. And it was very cold, and we all hated to go into the toilet because we had to go outside and into the toilet. But beside, from the kitchen inside, we had a bathtub. And it was altogether separate. And then we had three big bedrooms upstairs, and my mother and father used to sleep in the front bedroom, and then my brother had his bedroom in between, and then the rest of us had this huge bedroom in the back of the house.
Your brother had one room to himself?
Uh-huh, because he was a boy.
Yeah. How did you feel about that?
Oh, nothing. We never had what we would call sibling rivalry or anything. But for years and years, I used to call him Anisa, and I never knew his real name, which is Tsugio. And Anisa means honorable brother. And it was just something that we had picked up, and we always called him Anisa, not really knowing what it meant.
Did he call you honorable sister?
No. It was just Yoneko or whatever, you know.
Right.
But it's not because we were... because it was Japanese and it was honorable, but it was just sort of a nickname that that my parents had told us to use, you know. And it was Mama and Papa and our sisters.
Did the house have a Japanese appearance? Or
No.
Huh. How was it decorated then?
Well, there was a piano. There was a piano, and we called it a sofa, and there were two chairs in the front room, which was never used except for company. And in the middle room, as I said, there was a big potbelly stove, and then Papa's desk on the side, and there were chairs all around. That was always the warmest room in the house. And the kitchen was cold. But we used to have baths probably about twice a week. And at that time, my sister and I would be the last ones to get into the bath. And I remember that we used to hold our noses and get our faces into the water, you know, to see how long we could stay underwater. But she and I were good swimmers.
Huh.
We were good swimmers, and that will come out in my story.
Okay. So were there any Japanese paintings or drawings or anything to remind you of Japan in?
Not that I can remember.
Do you think that was intentional by your parents?
No, because I think at that time we were poor, and I don't think that my parents even thought about getting Japanese things because it would have cost so much. Mm-hmm. And he wanted our family to become Americans. Mm-hmm. And so unintentionally or whatever, I don't think that we were aware of that.
Were there other Japanese that were living more a Japanese lifestyle that had maybe tatami mats and...
Oh, no.
No,
oh,
nothing
no.
Oh, like
no.
That?
No, 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 no. Uh-huh. That's way back, going back into, I think, 1950s, that people became aware of the Japanese culture. Because when I went to Japan, people had, where I was raised and studied, I was probably the only Japanese that they had ever seen wearing a Western clothes, mm-hmm. other than Americans who probably never went to that village.
Right, right.
See, it's a whole different era.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's like a fairy tale when I tell you these things, because your generation is, I don't know how old you are, but you're probably younger than my children, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, did your father ever make any furniture, or did he build things in the house?
Yes. We on the side of the house, we had a narrow garden, and we had a grapevine. What do you call this?
An arbor?
Arbor.
Or trellis?
Arbor.
Arbor.
Arbor. Okay. There are lots of grapes there. And underneath that, my father, I always tell you that he was clever, but he really was. He used to make a hammock out of string.
Huh.
It was beautifully made. And I remember as children, we used to fight over who was going to get to swing in the hammock. Going back to the house, we had a huge basement, and that's where my mother made what you call koji, and it's the so-called fermented rice that you use in making soy sauce and miso and mm-hmm. sake. Mm-hmm.
Did she make sake as well?
No. Uh-huh. No.
So, in her preparation of the food, did she prepare traditional Japanese food?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. Except the Sundays when my father did the cooking.
Uh-huh.
And that was a bone of contention with my friend Gwen. Her full name was Gwendolyn, but I used to go over there, and she was like my foster sister. And one day she says, I can't have you come to my house anymore. So I said, why? And she said, because you come to my house and you eat, but you've never had me eat at your house. And I said, well, you're welcome to come to my house anytime, you know. And so I asked my mother, and I said, Mama, can Gwen come? And she said she could come anytime, but she had no idea that Gwen would want to come and eat with six of us or seven of us when my father was there. And so she came over, and up to this day, she always pours soy sauce over her rice.
Huh.
And that's something that we never did.
You never did?
No. It was It was, we had like sukiyaki, you know, stir-fried things like that, and we might have juice on the rice, but then she always poured soy sauce, and to this day she does.